When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Live from the podcast zone, it's the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and totally bonkers weird stuff throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me as always is Brian Flamehair Reese.
I am Rackshade.
I was thinking about getting some rack shades up on my my patio over here.
Nice rack shade.
Exactly.
Happy Selection Sunday and happy St. Patrick's Day to those who celebrate.
Wait, what day is today? Oh, it's tomorrow. I am completely lost as far as time is concerned.
Well, by the time this posts, it'll be long gone, so you could just make up whatever day you want.
Oh yeah, it'll be before St. Patrick's Day 2026.
Yes, there you are.
There you go.
Well, as a couple of people of descent.
People of descent. From the Irish.
And also descent.
Yes. Oh boy, this is starting really well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, so you know, I don't know about you, but I've reached a certain age where I don't indulge the way I used on a St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, no, it's I'm going to work. And will I wear green? Probably, because 95% of what I own has green in it. So, but will it be a choice?
Yes.
Not specific to the day, no.
Yes. I will listen to the Pogues on my way to work.
Yeah.
There you go. Anyway.
But not U2, because U2 is a band from Ireland, but they are not an Irish band.
Interesting.
You have it.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting distinction.
Whereas the Pogues are not a band from Ireland, but they are an Irish band.
What do you mean they're not a band from Ireland? They started in Ireland.
They formed in England.
Yeah, but they're Irish guys.
King was raised in England.
But they're Irish.
Well, they're of Irish descent.
Okay. I think all this is a
you're going to cut this anyway.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
We will see how my editing changes upon the day. I make decisions on the fly.
You know, yeah. I mean, you could leave it in and we'll sound like we actually have interests outside of, you know, Biff Bam Pow.
So anyway, today on the program, we will be discussing something. Wow. An interesting choice for Brian Reese. Shade the Changing Man, the Steve Ditko created thing that he did. Good luck with it, Brian.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a thing that exists in the world. And I'm so happy it does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll be fun to talk about. But so since I mentioned Steve Ditko, we should have a little chat, Ryan, about Mr. Stevie D.
And is it a fireside chat?
A little fireside chat. He is undoubtedly, you know, one of the most influential creators in comic book history. And he has a complicated legacy.
Ooh, that's fair.
Yeah, okay. I'm of two minds with Steve Ditko. I mean, he is one of, if, you know, in the, say, top five, maybe top three greatest artists in comic book history.
Influential? Yes.
Okay. Our first bit of controversy on Mr. Ditko. I actually really like his style, especially his earlier stuff, you know, Doctor Strange and Spider-Man, of course. Yeah. It's just sort of that, I don't know, it's lanky and a sinewy. I don't know, his figures are really lanky, is the best word I can say. Right. And then, of course, he has that psychedelic feel to him.
It's very atmospheric.
Very atmospheric.
There's a lot of his work that's atmospheric.
And he, for the most part, I don't know about the comic we read today, but for the most part, he's very good at conveying action, conveying emotion. You know, there's that very famous thing in Spider-Man where he's trying to lift the bar over his head with the rain coming down.
Yeah, it's one of the most famous.
Yeah. And it's
pieces of comic book work.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. The way he created, you know, you feel the weight, you feel the tension, you feel the struggle of Peter Parker as he's doing this. Right. And it's almost wordless, which is amazing because Stan Lee was on that book. No, but it's brilliant. So he was able to convey that. He was able to convey motion and action and emotion really, really, really well. I think Steve Ditko, one of the best artists in comic book history, in my opinion.
If he had had the tools that a lot of modern artists have now, we can only imagine what his stuff would look like. Comparing modern artists to artists from Steve Ditko's era, particularly the 50s, 60s, into the 70s, it is not fair. And that is so when I have had my kind of what we call him the greatest or one of the greatest, my caveat there is understanding that they were still, we were tied to four color medium, churn it out type of artistry that didn't have the sort of paper quality, the tools, all of the other things that make other current artists like pop in ways that, and we always have to recognize that when comparing older artists to current artists.
Yeah, and you said that, imagine Ditko if he had the tools that they have today. Take a current artist, anyone, and strip them of that and put them back in that time where they say, "Hey, you're on four books and you have to have pages done by the end of the week every week. Do it." And you basically, like you use the word churn. That's perfect. Ditko and Kirby and so forth. They were cranking out pages and panels just over and over and over. And when you look at the, sometimes it's a little iffy, but 99 times out of 100, it's brilliant stuff. And they were doing that so quickly. The turnaround was
And the
insane.
understanding of anatomy and the way a body moves and the way, does sometimes it means they scrimp on background? Absolutely, because they couldn't Photoshop a background in.
Well, I mean, that's why Kirby would always do his photo collages, He would photocopy. He was Xerox a scene from space or something and lay it behind his stuff. It was a quick, easy way to do it. And had he been doing that in the era of Photoshop, it would have been just amazing. But the tools weren't there. Anyway, to get down to it, I really admire and appreciate Ditko's art. That being said, his writing is interesting.
There's a reason he's renowned as an artist.
Exactly. Full credit, he did create some pretty iconic characters. Spider-Man, of course, being
The primary.
the primary.
Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, the Creeper,
Hawk and Dove.
Shade the Changing Man, of course.
The
Oh,
question.
the
Which
Question.
the question which will lead to, I think, where you're heading.
Yes, and Mr. A is another example of that.
Yeah.
So that leads into his. Now, I know comic books are not supposed to be political,
Except they all are.
except they all are. And
I'm
Mr.
going to
Ditko's.
probably address that slightly coming up.
Yeah, and Mr. Ditko's politics, let's just say we don't see eye to eye.
Yeah, I mean, people have figured us out by now
Oh,
to the
yeah.
point where they understand that Ayn Rand is probably not one of our favorite people. Did I mispronounce that?
Nope, you did not. It's pronounced exactly like that.
Yep, okay.
Yes. So Ditko was a devotee of Ayn Rand.
Well, and the thing is that he infused a lot of his the objectivism into some of his characters, the ones that he wrote, not necessarily in his art, although there is an argument that says you could look at some of his represent in his art, you could look at representations of, say, authoritarianism, that in his art he represents authoritarianism in a sort of positive artistic light. And,
Yes.
even going back to Spider-Man.
Yes. And we'll get into some of that. There's some representations in this comic we're going to read today or talk about today. Yeah, he shows people in power in a very, very positive light. To kind of give you an example of what I'm talking about his political ideas, the best representation, I think, is Hawk and Dove, because Hawk, the one who's, very pro-war, pro-fighting, pro-violence, he's very heroic and he's stoic and he's strong and
He's big.
he's manly. Whereas Dove is kind of wimpy and effeminate and yeah, he's always wrong. Yeah. And it's just so, I don't know, it's just so obvious. The
Well, and
thing,
it's
yeah,
you
go
see
ahead.
that it, Mr. A is, to be honest, I've never really read Mr. A because because it just seemed like garbage to me. The Question is a character which he wrote for Charleston, because Ditko was well-traveled, to diminishing results.
Yeah. There was not a bridge he was not willing to burn.
And, you know, like, The Question is actually a character that I like, and maybe because it translated into another writer's famous comic book in which they just ripped off all the Charleston characters.
Tell me more.
And a character based off The Question that is much beloved in Rorschach.
Much misunderstood as well.
Or much misunderstood. So I've always appreciated The Question. To be honest, not to get too far into the weeds, but I actually prefer the Rene Montoya Question to the Vic Sage Question.
Absolutely. Well, this gets into something that I was going to bring up, which was Ditko's great at creating characters, but they're always, and, you know, I'm throwing out this controversial statement, they're done better when other people write them.
Yes. We're going to see that today. In this particular comic, the main character was actually written way better by a different writer much later.
You can name almost every character. And that he, that almost every character that Ditko wrote himself.
Right. And this is the writing, not the art.
Yes, the writing. Again, yes, art, pristine. But when he writes them, they're questionable. When someone else writes them, they're really fascinating stuff. So I don't think Ditko was much of a nuanced man when it came to story, which is why, and we had this conversation off mic, when you talk about Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
What makes Spider-Man Spider-Man? You know, why is he one of the most iconic characters of all time? But an argument can be made. It's because the look, a lot of people would argue that Ditko created Spider-Man and he is the sole creator. Now, I would argue that
there's a lot of, I said weeds earlier, but now we're really in the weeds.
Well, it's an interesting, I find that anyway. The way Ditko wanted to take the character of Spider-Man was much the way he wanted to take all of his other creations in a very right-wing way, very authoritarian way.
Authoritarian, yeah.
Yeah. And Stan Lee, for all of his faults, stepped in and was very much the co-creator and said, no, we're going to make it a teen drama and we're going to make it into, you know, more of a soap opera and about feelings. And my argument has always been Ditko made Spider-Man iconic. Stan Lee made Spider-Man popular.
I think that's a good point because Stan Lee was more attuned to who was reading Marvel comics at the time. Ditko never really exhibited, even when we get to Shade, like an understanding of the culture around them. He was almost reacting against the culture, whereas Stan Lee was like working to, I don't want to say appease the culture that was reading, but there was Marvel when Spider-Man was created was being read by certain individuals. And this is where we saw like the beginning of the shift to comics for kids, to comics for semi-adults, to adults or what have you. And Stan Lee recognized that the counterculture was reading comics.
Yes, he was definitely gearing it towards not little kids, but he wanted it to be towards teens in general, college students, suburban white kids is what he was gearing it towards.
Yeah.
You know, to put it very bluntly.
Yeah.
And I think Stan Lee had a knack for, again, his stuff now seems really wordy and I'll make jokes about it.
Right.
But he had a knack for telling interesting, dramatic or melodramatic stories that appealed to that demographic. Again, for all his faults, he made Marvel popular in general.
Right. Pardon the joke. He was the soapbox.
Indeed. Yes. He was very, very lucky to have some of the most iconic artists in comic book history to be working with him at the time. So.
Right. And Steve Ditko is certainly one of them. We come not to
bury Ditko.
Right. Ditko as an artist, as a visual artist, is stunning.
You know, and even as an idea man, his conception of Spider-Man is very good. His conception of Doctor Strange, even something as ridiculous as the Creeper, it's a really cool idea. His execution of it story-wise was, again, questionable. But there's no, these characters are still around and they're still being examined because the idea is sound.
The Creeper has been used very recently in some pretty important ways in the DC universe, as is the question, although it's the Renee Montoya question as opposed to the Vic Sage question. But yeah, I mean, and Shade still pops up randomly, particularly in the more Justice League darky kind of magic world. But occasionally, Shade still rears his red head.
Indeed. And just people riffing on Ditko's work, like Watchmen, Alan Moore and Watchmen, and so forth. Anyway, Ditko is incredibly influential, and his legacy is, I mean, and then you also, I guess we have to factor in the fact that he was very much a recluse. He's known as the J.D. Salinger of comics, where he did not interact with fans. He did not interact with the community in any large part. Unless absolutely forced to, which is, fine.
Apparently he did write letters. He did reply to letters, but he didn't reply to them in a public space. He replied to them personally.
And again, that's fine. That's,
But
some people.
it's keeping with the reclusive thing. He didn't do it in fan magazines, or he didn't do it in he did write for some comic magazines here and there. I mean, there is a history of that where some of his objectivism really played out. But
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah,
And
but he was not personally showing up to fan events or personally putting himself out in mainstream comics as, someone commenting in a comic book that got, 100,000 or more issues being published.
he's a very private person, and that I respect that. Absolutely. It was taken in the fan community as him being arrogant or, hating his fans, which, I don't know if you notice this, Brian. Comic book fans can be
Extra.
a little extra, from time to time. So I think it's a little bit of fans overreacting, and
Not us, of course.
yeah. No, I think we're pretty good at being open to most people. But anyway, I don't know. Ditko's a confusing guy.
Yeah, he has a complicated legacy, but it's also a legacy that is extremely important to the medium. Even if you take out him creating one of the top three or four most iconic characters, it's he still deserves a place in the in at the very top of the pantheon.
Like I said, I would put him in the top five of greatest comic book creators of all time, but at least in the top 10.
Yeah, well, I would go along with the top 10.
All right, so there it is. That's Steve Ditko, done and dusted.
Yeah.
Except now we got to talk about one of his creations.
We do.
We'll do that right after we come back. And we're back. Brian, you chose a comic this week. Yes, you did.
I certainly did.
I am really excited to hear how you're going to explain this. Have at it.
All right. Love comics. That might seem like a strange thing to say in an intro on a comic book podcast. Of course, I love comics. Why would I be doing this otherwise? But there is a thing about comics that can bring an astounding range of emotion and visceral reaction that is different than the other forms of art that exist. Dance, film, music, visual, fine arts, theater, painting, literature, poetry, performance art, etc. They all have amazing ways to communicate joy and sadness in the full range of emotional, political, personal, and internalized representation of the human experience and our reactions to the world around us. Humanity would be lost without these expressions. But many of these forms are semi-constrained by material, and not in a negative way, by the media. They can, and often do, break boundaries in interesting ways, which is fun and challenging. Art of any kind is vastly necessary to us as an eternal reflection. Sometimes the medium is the message, and sometimes the message is the medium. Comics get to have it all. Well, sort of. Not everything comics do can mimic the experience other arts bring us, but they can do much of it while combining written narrative, visual representation, and the sequential forward movement of film. The primary focus is on these three aspects, but the nature of the medium also allows for experimentation into the other parts of the creative experience. And because they are comics, and only for kids, they get to fly under the radar. No Kennedy Center honors for Jack Kirby, apparently. Short of a 20-hour history of comics and their subversive nature, including the amazing work of underground and independent and personal work of many great creators that deserve their own recognition, the focus of superhero comics alone could go on forever, with all the bad contrasting with the very good. Comics are complicated, but like the great sci-fi and fantasy writers who turned out to be prophets, comics have reflected society throughout their existence. Many of these are very arguable ideas, and please have at it. But at the end of the day, why I love comics can be summed up by the fact that they can be both literary, subversive, and beautiful, and they can be big, dumb, nonsensical, and batshit crazy. Which brings us to Shay the Changing Man. Created, plotted, and drawn by the legendary Steve Ditko for DC Comics in 1977, with dialogue by the estimable Michael Fleischer, Shay the Changing Man ran for 8 issues before being a victim of the great DC implosion of 1978. It's an insanely nutty comic book. The story focuses on one Rack Shade of the Metaverse, who is wrongly accused of treason, and his attempt to clear his name whilst fighting off a myriad of villains, ne'er-do-wells, and governmental politicians. Shade's primary powers are given to him by the powerful M-Vest, a prototype that gives him a force field and the ability to alter his appearance based on the psyche of the individual he is in conflict with, hence the Changing Man part of the name. Bouncing between the Earthverse, hey, that's us, the Zero Zone, the Metaverse, and the very dreaded Area of Madness, Shay deals with betrayal, political intrigue, fussy and potentially criminal in-laws, a talking red ball with arms, a jilted ex-wife, street-level gangsters, powerful cosmic entities, and a level of existential crisis that would be explored brilliantly by Peter Milligan and Chris Bacalo in the seminal Vertigo reboot of the character later on. The series ends on a cliffhanger, unfinished. But between those 8 issues, we have some of the most insanely rendered panels of art, Ditko doing Ditko, and out-of-control dialogue that makes sense only half the time. The plotting is completely batty. It's a kooky comic that could only be a comic. No amount of CGI could do this justice. It would only be distilled. As a precursor to more respected work, this is entertaining, valuable stuff. But as a piece of work that, well, isn't great, it is one hell of a lot of fun. And this is why I love comics. So, Paul, I recommended this.
Yeah. You did indeed recommend this.
This is a true statement. I did recommend this.
I was listening to your intro in the beginning and I was like, damn, he's getting philosophical about Shade the Changing Man. No, this is a... I enjoyed the crap out of this. I enjoyed reading every issue, but did I understand it? No.
No.
Yeah. And you said the dialogue makes sense half of the time. That's incredibly generous.
Bless Michael Fleischer for trying to make sense of this.
I would love to have sat in with the meetings with him and Ditko. Ditko trying to explain everything he wants to do. And
right.
Then Fleischer just like, really? Okay.
You want me to write what?
And just everything has like the M vest and the N agents.
Well, and here's one of the things I love about this comic, and I want to get this out of the way right. This is a Marvel comic. I mean, it's under the DC banner, but every single thing is with a dash. The meta-verse or the zero-zone. Everything is with a dash.
To be honest, it's an M-dash is what it is.
That's meta.
Yes, I love that it's the metaverse. Everyone's very self-referential there. It takes on a different, of course, we use the word meta much differently than we did back then, but it probably sounded so cool and exotic.
Yeah. Well, this is the 70s. Nothing made sense in the 70s. And I mean that as a decade, not just comics.
Oh, no, I agree. Again, I enjoyed this a lot. I'm really, really excited to hear you try to explain the story because it might help me, too.
Well, be prepared to be disappointed. Throughout these eight issues, what we learn is that Rackshade...
The names in this are insane.
...was framed as a traitor. And we learn most of the full story throughout the eight issues, but essentially he was part of the science police in the metaverse, and he rose to great prominence, but there are bad actors within the government agencies that are behind all of this, who used him as, well, basically the patsy, right, for their attempt to take over the metaverse and eventually invade the Earthverse.
Right, because if you take over the Earth zone...
I get confused between the verse and the zones.
Yeah, learn your verse and zone. Mm-hmm. Apparently if you take over the Earth zone, then it makes it so much easier to take over the metaverse.
Right.
Why?
Because comics... To do this, they needed, for some reason, Rackshade needed to be the patsy because he was the great hero that would stand in their way.
Right. They knew that he had the ability to, he among all other metaversians, right, would be the one to be able to stop them.
At some point, he was the one able to survive the Area of Madness. We can get into that here in a minute. And because he had the only prototype for the M-dash vest.
Which is apparently used for miners.
For miners. I mean,
like people who mined in the earth.
Right.
Not
right.
Not
or
miners.
Mined in like various territories that could not support life. So this M-vest, which was created by Mariko, hence the M for the M-vest. The prototype was created that was to help these miners survive the atmosphere. So it created a force field that protected them. Now, how this also became a thing that allowed the wearer to alter their body and not actually alter their body. So Shade doesn't actually alter his body.
Just appears as if he's altered.
It just appears as if, and it plays on, like I said in the intro, it's based on the psyche of the person who is observing. And there's a whole thing about the observed versus that which they are observing and how that changes that's a different thing.
Yeah, I was going to get into this with you, but might as well start it here because it seems appropriate. What the hell does he do? What are his powers? I know the force field.
Right.
I get that.
And he changes, but he's also like one of the top science cops. So he's obviously trained in physical combat. I mean, these are humans, right? I mean,
I would think so, except there are some who are superhuman. So I guess the metaverse has superhumans the same way the Earth zone has superhumans.
His powers really are just the force field that protects him. And this is only when he's wearing the M-vest and the weird altering his perceived physical appearance. And then, of course, his natural athletic abilities to, knock him and sock him.
Yeah, his fighting prowess. It's just very odd, you know.
Right.
And then when you get to the force field, I'm not going to criticize this as a bad thing. I think it should have been used more. The force field protects his body and protects him from harm,
right,
but he can still feel everything. So if somebody shoots a bullet at him, the bullets will bounce off, but he feels the impact of that bullet. It's so frustrating about this comic. There's some great ideas here that if explored would have been amazing, you know.
But it's just like wearing a bulletproof vest.
Yes.
I've never worn a bulletproof vest, but the idea is you still feel the bullets hitting the vest, but the bullets aren't going to won't go through the vest and actually enter your body, but you still feel the impact.
But I think that's something that could be because at one point somebody has heat power and they're burning his body and he's not actually physically being burned, but he can feel the heat.
Sure.
And it hurts him. But, you know, that's an interesting thing to explore, but they don't. Well, maybe they would have. Who knows?
Who can tell?
Who can tell? I mean, just to jump to the end real quick, when I got to issue 8 and it's like, oh, this is getting good. I guess we're done now.
Yeah, you know, DC cut a third of its titles.
Yeah,
just boom, all gone.
It's funny because you read some. I assume you read some of the letters pages.
I did read the letters pages.
There's a lot of them saying like, "Shade's not going anywhere. Shade's popular. We're keeping this going. We're canceled."
And they never even announced it was canceled. It just was gone.
Yeah,
they were still pimping the next issue in issue 8, and then no. So the idea is that Shade has been locked up as a treasonous person, and part of the treason was somehow he was responsible for a bomb going off in the home of his wife Melu's parents' home. So he was set up. Of course, we find this out pretty quickly. He was set up to seem like he was the one that set off the bomb. And so, of course, his wife Melu now, who is an N agent as well, has, so her parents were crippled and injured. She blames him for this.
Mello has some anger issues.
I understand.
Yeah.
You know, if I thought someone I loved did something to seriously injure other people I love, I would have sads.
But so, there's a lot of her clenching her fist going, "I'll kill you."
Yeah, there's a whole lot of, I mean, she's emo. So he is tried and found guilty of treason, sentenced to death. So he's locked up in prison with a whole bunch of other of the bad guys. There are good guys and there are bad guys.
Yeah. What are they? They're the czars of evil or something.
At some point, like the whole story starts off with some kind of riot where the bad guys are trying to escape prison. The good guys come in and they shut it down. And somehow all the bad guys are sent to the Zero Zone, which is not the Phantom Zone.
No.
It's the Zero Zone. It's this weird space between the metaverse and the Earth Zone.
It's a neutral zone.
And they're all floating around, and that comes into play. But somehow, Rack Shade, who's the wiliest of them all, finds his way to the Earthverse or the Earth Zone. I get my verses and zones mixed up. But he makes his way to Earth, unlike everybody else, except for a couple instances later, makes his way to his apartment, because apparently he had an apartment on Earth. I don't know why he had an apartment on Earth, but he had an apartment on Earth.
Apparently he was working on Earth, so he had to have a secret identity while working on Earth. So he just had an apartment there, and when he was found to be convicted of treason, no one thought to check that. It seems like some prime real estate in Manhattan.
A city that is unnamed.
Yes.
But it's pretty New York-y.
It's definitely New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not New York, it's Metropolis, but it really feels more New York. But and of course, there is the M vest, which he's just got in a closet.
Just hanging there.
And I don't know how all this works. Did he pay like several years rent in advance? There's no landlord that came in. They didn't rent it out to somebody else. Nobody broke in at any point. None of the metaverse folks were like you said, "Oh, he's got an apartment. We have this missing M vest."
Well, that's how apartments in New York work, right? You just get it and that's it. You just have it for your life. You just have it for life.
But anyway, of all the people, he's the one that figures out how to get to Earth and just bops back into his abandoned apartment and pulls out the M vest that has just been sitting in his closet. The biggest piece of tech from the metaverse, it's got in his closet.
Yeah, just hanging around. So apparently the Medians, the people from the metaverse, have an outpost on Earth that is in the Occult Research Center, or
Orc for short.
And Orc is run by a guy named Wizard. So a wizard working with Orc.
See, I was trying to be generous, and in my head, I was like, "Oh, Wizor."
It could be Wizor. I was saying Wizor.
No, I think it is Wizor, but I was trying to be generous.
Wizor. I read that going, has Steve Ditko been reading Tolkien? I think so.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. So, and of course, I was like, you know, so here's Gandalf or Wizor or Wizor. Who is leading this occult research. And the whole point of it is, and this is actually kind of great, it is misinformation by giving real information. And this is a great idea. I love this.
There's so much, like I said, Ditko has some great ideas. He's not really following through on it though, but continue, I'm sorry.
But yeah, I mean, it is. They're like telling the truth with the idea that by telling the truth, it'll seem so kooky that nobody will believe it. So again, like I said, it's misinformation by giving real information.
Yeah. Tell the truth, and the truth is so outlandish that everyone will think it's a made-up story.
There are conspiracy theorists out there who would love this idea.
Oh, yeah.
This is a little bit of Ditko's leanings that are coming through.
To be fair to Ditko, there's some stuff that hint at his political leanings in this, but not as overt as some of his other stuff.
Not as overt, no, huh?
Yeah. We get some of the things like the uniforms that the N agents and the metaverse people wear are a little flashy.
Yeah.
Again, this is just sort of hinted at rather than in your face.
But the idea is, once Shade escapes and gets here, his goal is to find the people who framed him. The whole point of this comic is Shade trying to clear his name. I mean, that's it. This is the fugitive. Initially, the one-armed man is this guy named Kempo or Emp, and then it becomes Majan. And then, of course, the deeper conspiracies start really rolling in. The next few issues are kind of by the note in some ways. Melu is sent to chase down Shade, because any good policing authority knows the one person you want to send after an escaped convict is someone who is compromised by their feelings about said convict.
Yes, always send the former fiance who has a vendetta against the person.
Perfectly great choice.
Absolutely.
So she is sent to Earth via a transporter, as opposed to the Zero Zone, to chase down Shade. Meanwhile, we have several of the bad guys who are stuck in the Zero Zone have also found their way to Earth. At the same time, so we get these like supervillains showing up on Earth, causing destruction, trying to take over the Earth, while Shade is just chasing down gangsters. We get street level gangsters who are players in all of this. It's part of because Kempo or Emp, the person that Shade initially thinks is the one who framed him, is now just living on Earth as a gangster.
Right. And I thought that's where this whole thing was going to go, is sort of like I thought they were going to go more for the gangster angle, more of like a kingpin situation. But that quickly gets dispensed with.
Yeah. I mean, all of these people end up getting killed. Melu and Shade end up variously fighting these sort of bad guys. Every time one of them gets killed by somebody else, Shade is there in the room, and Melu shows up, and she sees what she thinks is him killing these people.
Right. It's always circumstantial, because
right.
Shade and is so there, somebody's dead, Melu sees it.
So it just keeps adding to, you know, sort of her narrative that Shade is a big giant traitor, bad guy, and needs to... She wants to kill him then and there. And this is Ditko's concept of policing.
Yes.
So this is Melu is sort of the stand-in for Ditko, because Ditko very strongly believed that there should be no mercy shown, and the police or the authoritarians should be able to essentially execute at will.
If you are a criminal, you have no rights. Okay, I'm going to say this now. Up until issue 6, what exactly does Shade do?
Well,
he doesn't really do anything. He's just sort of there.
He just bops around trying to prove his innocence and gets caught in all kinds of folder roll.
He occasionally punches someone, but for the most part, he just sort of shows up. Somebody dies. Melu says, "It's you."
And then he runs away.
Then he runs away into another situation where something bad happens. Melu shows up. "It's you."
Well, and he keeps getting captured over and over and over
again.
Yes,
yes.
You know, it's kind of like the Private Eye or detective novel, a genre that I love, but every time I read a Private Eye or detective or noirish crime novel, whether it be from, you know, the greats like Jim Thompson or Raymond Chandler or some of the more minor ones or the more pulpish ones, there's always that moment in the book where the detective gets knocked out and wakes up like tied to a chair. It's such a generic trope, and I always get excited when that's not used in a novel. But right. This happens. Shade is like, I think every issue he gets captured.
It gets captured by somebody.
And he always has to fight his way out.
But even that, it always seems like someone else is fighting and he just sort of slips out. You know, because we'll get into Agent Barak. Apparently there was an N agent named Barak who was in the Zone of Madness.
Right. This is before the 1990s and early 2000s.
So, yeah. So Barack's in the Zone of Madness.
This is where the story shifts. There's not a lot of to do on Earth, actually. It's Shade fighting some gangsters, trying to find the people who framed him, all of the people that he finds who framed him ended up getting killed. Some bad guys show up, they pontificate as bad guys do, and then they get beat down and then they die. Eventually, Shade has to escape back into the Zero Zone. And this leads all of the action back to everything else takes place in the metaverse again. So he only spends a few issues on Earth.
And
with no interactions to the DC superheroes. There's no connection to the DC universe in this comic at all.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Do you think that was heading in that direction? Or
I think eventually it would have happened because it's a DC comic and it was meant, at least one would think editorially meant, to be in the DC universe. To eventually tie in, I mean, it's a DC comic. At some point, you can't not put Batman or Superman in a crossover. But that never happened.
No, obviously.
And Shade leaves Earth eventually. And so back through the Zero Zone he goes. And while he's going through the Zero Zone, you have a bunch of the meta N agents or science agents. I don't think these are N agents. They're just science agents who have been going into the Zero Zone to recover all the bad guys. And they've got everybody except Shade. But for some reason, they're still there. And a group of the science agents run into these flesh eaters who are just living in the Zero Zone, who attack them and end up killing most, if not all of them, except definitely this guy, Barack, who is there to witness that Shade comes in and beats up the flesh eaters and saves Barack and also takes, I think, the bodies of the other science agents and brings them back to the metaverse.
And I do want to point out to the listener, if all of this sounds really confusing and complicated, Brian is doing a fantastic job of making it concise.
Well, I'm trying.
I know. No. This is
you're not easy.
You're doing yeoman's work there, my friend. It is a very confusing set of events.
Motivation outside of like clearing one's name. Again, this is the fugitive. Outside of him clearing his name and Melu being hot mad, a lot of the motivations, we haven't gotten to Sudi yet, the giant red ball.
I believe it's pronounced Sude.
Okay, but see, I wasn't sure.
I'm kidding.
Because spelled as is the supreme decider, which sounds like another president from the late 90s, early 2000s.
No, it's spelled S-U-D-E, supreme decider. Right. So Sudi is probably how it's pronounced, or it could be Sud.
Not the Marquis de Sade. It's not the singer Sade.
So Sude is a big red ball with arms.
Yes.
And horns. He has little devil horns.
This from my intro is why I love comics, because where else do you get CGI could not create this thing properly.
When Sudi shows up on a page, I was like, and what the hell is that? And everybody just seems to go along with it as if, well, obviously this is just something that exists.
And I think early on in our podcasting life, I got really excited about a floating head. I remember this.
Yes.
And I'm also very excited about this. And this is all of this is why I love comics. This can only exist, Sude or Sudi or whatever they are, can only exist in comics. They can exist on visually represented art, and they can be remade in film as a CGI. But to put it together in a narrative and a representation on paper that also has forward movement like film does. So you have, and it's a talking, speaking thing. I don't see how this can be presented in the same way in any other medium.
I know. At one point, one of Sudi's lackeys is confessing that Shade got away. And in anger, Sudi pounds him to death with his fists. We find out later it's a her.
Yeah.
But I was just looking at that going, evil Pac-Man is pounding a man to death with her fists. This is insane.
Yes. Sude is the big bad, we think. Maybe not.
I don't think it's pronounced Sude, by the way. I just thought it was...
The Supreme Decider. I love it. And the fact that the Supreme Decider... So there's these great scenes on the metaverse where Sude and the good guys or the science police or the authoritarians or whatever it is. Like they're literally occupying buildings next to each other. Like the way Ditko draws it is like they're within like, 50 feet of each other, and he just has these thought bubbles or these talk bubbles coming out of each of these things saying separate things, and they're right next to each other.
They're in an office building and they're just renting offices next to each other, is what it
Well, and I
seems
think
like.
that's what it is. I love it. I absolutely, it makes no sense. It's big and stupid and dumb, and I love every minute of it.
So where are
And
we in this story?
I have no idea. The story doesn't know where it is at any given time.
Yeah.
So us getting lost in the plot is equal to Fleischer and Ditko getting lost in the plot. So we're
Yeah.
reflecting the comic.
I picture Steve Ditko as a little kid telling a story. And then the Supreme Decider, who's a big red ball, comes in and Shade turns into a monster, but only some people can see him. And then,
It's just,
like, okay, whatever, sir.
yeah. So eventually Shade makes his way back. He goes through the Zero Zone. He saves Barak. So he has one person who has witnessed Shade doing good. Barak is also injured. And so when he's brought into the hospital and we first meet Dr. Sagan.
And he has billions and billions of patients.
I mean, I love that it's Dr. Sagan, and it's not even, it's Sagan. It's
Yep.
Dr. Sagan, who is treating, and this is the great part. So, Barak is brought, so Shade drops him off. I guess he just drops him off and runs away. Malu is back. She's there. Barak is being brought in under the care of Dr. Sagan. It turns out Dr. Sagan is treating the people who have been affected by the Area of Madness.
Which is a
And the Area of
section.
Madness is one of my favorite things because the Area of Madness is one of the very strong things in this that carries over to the Vertigo series. But the Area of Madness is somewhere in the Zero Zone that if you go in and you emerge, all you do is yell or shriek.
Right, because
So everyone,
you're so,
it's
in
madness.
yes, you're overwhelmed with fear.
And this is actually the Area of Madness is the most important part of this comic book that carries over into the future more legendary Shade. So yes, the Area of Madness, Dr. Sagan is treating people who have been victims of the Area of Madness. We never really learn about the Area of Madness in this comic book. We just know it is a thing that people enter. We do get some, eventually Malu is sent into the Area of Madness and Shade rescues her, which is another plot point coming up. The Area of Madness turns people's fears back on them. Am I reading that right?
Yes, it manifests your fears into reality in the
Right.
same way that the M vest can manifest the shape of Shade into what you fear the most.
Right.
Is there a parallel there? I was kind of reading into it as the reason Shade can survive the Area of Madness is because he has sort of that power himself. I
Right.
mean,
And
none of this is explained.
it's not addressed at all.
Yeah, maybe it's my own headcanon that I was kind of imparting onto the story,
You're
you
also
know?
probably remembering this story from a different writer.
Yeah, probably. Been a while since I read the Vertigo series, but the Vertigo series actually does attempt to explain things.
Well, the Vertigo series, the Peter Milligan series, goes even wackier than what we're reading, but wackier in a different way. Because it's better constructed. We're not here to talk about the Vertigo series. Someday we will, because I love it, which is what led me to this. It's like, let's read the original. So the plot point being that Dr. Sagan is treating people who have come out of the Area of Madness and they have this screaming disease. Every one of them just screams.
Which
And
is
of course it's,
kind of horrific, you know,
yes.
especially the way it's depicted. Again, Ditko's art in this, these wide eyes and screaming mouths. It is grotesque in a
Right.
good way.
And it sounds like a really terrible place to end up. I mean, it's called the Area of Madness. I don't want to go there. We're introduced to Dr. Sagan, who becomes important down the line as well. This is where Barak ends up, and Barak is mumbling about, oh, Shade saved him, but they kind of dismiss it. Malu is still, I'm going to kill him. But Malou at this point is in trouble because she didn't kill Shade on Earth when she had an opportunity. And so she's getting scolded by Majan and some other folks. She's told to either resign or go on leave because they feel like she didn't kill Shade because she has an attraction to him.
But Majan, who's Captain Majan, who's the head of
Yes.
the N agents, he's actually the one who framed Shade in the first place. So it's all a conspiracy, man.
It's everything is a conspiracy. What
Yes.
follows over
It's some kind of
the
deep state.
what follows over the next 4 or 5 issues, and I don't mean to give short shrift to some of them because there are plot points we'll want to hit on, is Shade back in the metaverse again trying to work to clear his name. And as he goes, he does get some allies.
Well, he gets Barack on side.
Right. But Barack is also conflicted. And throughout the next few issues, Barack is like, he saved my life. I don't want him to die. But if he's, Barack is still like, I don't know if he's guilty or innocent. What follows is a bunch of procedural stuff where there's this whole bit with this evil scientist woman who comes into play later because she's the one that sends Malou into the Area of Madness, which leads Shade to go rescue her. And we get something important that comes out of that. But Shade goes through a whole bunch of different, sort of underlings who are part of the conspiracy theory.
I'm sorry. A lot happens, but nothing really happens.
Right. It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of sound and fury signifying, well, nothing.
Nothing. Exactly.
It's a lot of set pieces that allow for a lot of fight sequences,
It's a lot of chaos.
Which is where it's a lot of chaos, which is where Ditko shines. Though a lot of these upcoming, we do get some interesting information. And so Sudi is actively working in the background, constantly trying to free all of the bad guys from the prison they're in. So this goes back to when they were pulled from the Zero Zone and put back into prison. So Sudi seems to be primarily concerned with freeing the bad guys so that they could take over the metaverse so they can eventually go to the Earthverse. Meanwhile, Shade's just like bouncing around, getting into trouble, getting captured, escaping, getting captured, escaping, getting captured, escaping.
So there's this, Sudi works out of this central, command center. It's sort of her Sudi studio.
Oh, you were waiting for that.
Was so much. Yeah, so we get them to where are we in
Well,
the story?
the story doesn't know where it is.
Yeah.
So us getting a little bit lost in where in the story we are, even though we have our notes, is yeah. The big next plot point. Well, there are two. One is the revelation that so we've had a lot of flashbacks where we get a lot of the story of where the MVS came from and the story of how Shade was framed. Some of these are not really super important. We see it happens, we get it. That doesn't really feed much into it. We just get the backstory.
Yeah, and it's a typical 70s comic where a lot of things are recapped for you.
Yeah,
So
lots of recapping.
we get the story of Shade being framed a couple of times from a couple different angles, but it's pretty much the same. It's like, yeah, we got this. We understand.
Yeah. And so at some point, as they're doing their investigation, Shade and Melu end up confronting this evil scientist woman, Gola Zoe, who during the confrontation, she's doing experimentations to make super soldiers, but somehow during this confrontation, she sends Melu into the Area of Madness.
And Shade, of course, in heroic fashion, goes in after her.
Grabbing Gola and taking her with him. And so once they're there, there's this great psychedelic scene. And a lot of this plotting, which is generic, is all set up for Ditko to just draw the hell out of stuff.
Exactly. When we get, I was gonna, that's one of my points here is like we're in the Area of Madness, and now Ditko can be Ditko.
Yeah, he Ditkos the hell out of it all.
Yeah, if you've ever read early Doctor Strange stuff, there's these things that he does, like with giant balls with tentacles coming out of them. And he's really good at this stuff. And it looks amazing.
So Shade goes in because he's the only one that can survive the Area of Madness. He rescues Malou. I think he leaves Gola behind, brings her back, but of course she's got the Area of Madness disease.
The screaming memes.
She's got the screaming memes. And this is where he gets another ally with Dr. Sagan. So he brings her to Dr. Sagan and requests that she get, and I have to look this up, the memory processing technique, which has never been used before. But the idea is that Shade will absorb her memories from the Area of Madness and take them into himself.
Where he apparently can, he can process these things and survive them.
Sagan helps him. He essentially saves Melu's life, but then she will lose all memory of this, and he asks Sagan not to tell her he did this.
Which is silly, but
right.
But there is one point I liked. The, you know, Sagan's like, I can't do this, I could kill her. Shade makes the very valid point of, well, if you don't, she's just going to go crazy and die anyway, right? And the doctor was like, yeah, the point. Let's just do it.
Yeah, let's just do this. But what this leads to is, and this is one of the most interesting things, again, because it's the Area of Madness, he gets yet another ally. So now he has Barak and Sagan, who are, I love the fact that I'm talking about Barak and Sagan, like kind of on his side, but they're both sworn to secrecy. You know, this is like, as plot points go, this is one of the more important ones. The next one we find out is that Sudi is hot and mad about Malou being sent to the Area of Madness.
Because,
boom, 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 it turns out that Sudi is Malou's mom. This is where things completely go off the rails. And I realize that sounds odd for me to say that things go off the rails at this point.
It was barely hanging onto the rails as it was.
But now we enter the all of the stuff that is never explained and doesn't make, like, literally doesn't make sense, doesn't even follow, like, narrative.
Well, it's been toyed since the beginning that it was Melu's father, who's also been crippled by the framing of Shade. And it seems as if, I mean, you see him plotting the downfall of the metaverse.
Right. But and then that's just dropped. So it's in the same issue.
Yeah. But apparently, I don't know. I get the fact that it's supposed to be a red herring, that it's supposed to be like we're supposed to think that it's the father, but it's really the mother.
Clearly him. It's like a bearded old dude.
Yeah, it's clearly him saying, I'm going to take over the metaverse.
Right. And then by the end of it, it's the mom.
Which would have been a great reveal had we not had the father thing.
Again, this is where things really go. The rest of these issues, I don't even know. So we get this reveal. We have two people who are potentially on Shade's side, maybe a third with Shade's former boss, Captain Cross or Colonel Cross or what have you, who he visits. But that guy turns out to be completely inconsequential in the whole thing.
But then we also get the president, President Olan, who also is sort of on side with Shade.
He's starting to figure things out.
Okay, so how is it? Okay, we haven't talked about Chaos, who is a minion of Sude, who decides to go off on their own. Says, I'm not going to listen to you anymore. You're not my real mom. I'm going to go and try to take over the metaverse on my own.
Right. Well, Sude gets kind of defeated. Sude becomes not a player in all of this.
Yeah, Sude, who's Melu's mom, gets defeated.
But is also a giant red ball with arms and horns.
Exactly. But she gets put into a coma where, and this is actually kind of horrifying. She's in a coma, can't move, but is completely conscious of everything around her. Which is what a coma is. No, you typically when you're in a coma, you're not conscious. You're kind of sleeping. You don't. She can literally hear people talking and she's thinking in real time of like, oh my God.
And this is because of an interaction with Shade, of course. So Chaos, well, actually, we need to, before we get to Chaos, who is coming up, Sagan and Barak eventually kind of decide to reveal to Malou the truth of things.
Yeah, so Malou, who has up to this point been just full of anger and hatred, piss and vinegar, is just that they just kind of tell her, nah, he was framed, he's innocent. And she's like, oh, good. And she just, he's on side.
Right. And they basically tell her that he saved her life and their lives, or Barak, she say he saved Barak's lives. And then Sagan tells her what he did to save her after the area madness.
By showing her a videotape.
Yeah. So suddenly Malou is on board with, like you said, just suddenly, you know, oh gosh, I was wrong. Okay. Well, off we go. Let's save Shade.
Yeah. I hate him. I hate him. Oh, see, I love him. Yeah. But this is comic book logic. Doesn't matter. Move on.
So once again, there's some fight scenes. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. Subterfuge. Chaos is this character that's going to become important in a few minutes, is part of the downfall of Sudi. There's a whole bunch of bits with Shade and Barak getting potentially dying or what have you during this whole fight scene. At some point at the end of, like, we're getting to issue 6, so we're almost there. Through all of this, somehow Shade ends up becoming like this just blackened figure floating in the air.
Yes. And he goes into his color coma.
Yes.
And color coma is, in fact, my favorite Boy George song.
It is. and meanwhile, we're introduced to this other character, Dr. ZZ, who is looking to invade.
He's the tops.
He's like the lieutenant to Sudi.
Yes.
Right. And so he's brought in and he's starting to rally Sudi's troops to start the invasion of Earth.
Right. So Dr. ZZ, which, you know, it add another Z and he's just Dr. Sleep.
Mentioning him now means we never have to mention him again because his plot point disappears.
It's true. Well, he gathers up all the criminals of the metaverse and transports them to Earth, the Earth zone.
Right. Or is getting ready to do that, and then the series ends.
Real quick about Dr. ZZ. Ditko is amazing at creating characters and iconic character designs. Dr. ZZ, not so much.
No.
Yeah. He's just a guy with this weird face paint.
Mask. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it a mask or was it just a tattoo? Or I don't know what the hell it is on his face.
You know, and it doesn't matter because everything that he was supposed to be built up in the background to be ceases to exist by the end of issue 8. So, but we have to mention him partly because his name is Dr. ZZ. So we have Shade like floating like a blackened husk. He's supposed to be dead. Now, Malou, Barak, Sagan, they're all on board with helping Shade. And so we get to issue 7. Again, this is an issue that feeds into future series. This whole issue is just Shade changing colors.
Okay. I was laughing out loud when I heard this. I was LOLing, Ryan, because he's in a color coma, which means he keeps changing colors, green and purple and orange. But he occasionally wakes up to tell the story of the M-Vest.
Well,
he'll wake up, he'll tell a little bit of his backstory, and then they'll say, oh, he's fallen asleep again. And he goes and falls asleep. And then he wakes up a little bit later, and where was I? And he continues the story. It's just, why is this happening? Why is this? I just was going page after page. Why is this happening? The M-Vest is this crazy technology. It does good things. You don't need an entire issue to explain that it's for miners, mining use, and who the people were who invented it. Yeah, it's just, it's bizarre.
What we have happen now is not with a bang, but a whimper. So we have all this buildup. Shade has proven his innocence to enough people, including the president, who still has to see him executed because no court of law has exonerated him yet. So he's made all these friends. They've defeated Sudi. They defeated the cloak. They defeated Chaos. Chaos is a character that comes in inconsequential. They try to do a bunch of stuff. They get defeated.
Well, there's one part that Chaos. Now, Chaos is this guy in a yellow and black suit that just exudes like flames and stuff. And the Congress is trying to get him to share power with the president. And it was this weird political thing where the president refuses to share power. But Congress is going to vote him or going to impeach him unless they give, you know, co-equal power. It's just very bizarre.
Well, but almost reflective of,
yeah,
I don't know, current things. And then we have like the scenes, like you were talking about Melu's mom, like in the coma, and suddenly there's another guy who's a rival, Koru. We're led to believe that suddenly Melu's mom is not evil.
Yeah, she's just misunderstood.
She's just misunderstood, even though she's been killing people.
She literally, like I said earlier, she literally beat a man to death
Yes,
with her giant
with her
red.
tiny little hands, with her
Yes.
tiny little round red ball hands. I don't even know how to address these last couple issues because it just completely falls apart in every way, shape, or form. And it's all dressing for what is supposed to be a future issues.
Well, they set it all up where Shade comes out of his color coma. At one point, he was hidden in a freezer that was turned off, but someone turned the heat down, so he froze.
He froze into an ice cube.
But he breaks out of the ice cube, and that did the trick. He's back to normal now.
Right.
So he comes out. He's 100%. He's got full control of the M vest. The president is on side, but he said, "I still have to pretend to not acknowledge you,
Right.
but you will be working for me, and you're going to go to Earth, and you're going to be my agent on Earth." And
Malou and Shade have some make-out time.
yep, Malu and Shade are
Captain
on funsy
Cross,
times. Yeah.
right. Captain Cross and Barak and Dr. Sagan are all on
Yeah. So he's got it. He's going to,
stateside.
yeah, he's going to Earth to work as an agent. He's got his team behind him. He's got his best gal. And we're off for new adventures that never happen.
That never happened.
8 issues of setup for the actual premise of the story, and that never happens.
That never happens. And
Yes.
so, yeah, it just, we're, because there's a time constraint, we're glossing over a bunch of stuff. But
Oh, yeah.
I think this is the frustrating part about comic book series that are canceled without letting the creators finish. I understand we're talking about a specific comic, but if I can editorialize for a brief moment, this bullshit.
It really is, you know.
And it's, and we've seen this before where a comic is canceled, where they allow the creator to wrap up everything in one issue. And those issues are always awful because a creator can't do that in one issue. The idea that creators aren't allowed to see their vision through is aggravating. As goofy and dumb and fun and insane as this comic is, it's just like, okay, we've invested 8 issues into this kooky world and then it stops.
At least, have it from the outset say, okay, you get 12 issues to tell a coherent story. After that 12, we'll see how sales are and we'll move on. I understand economic constraints and so forth.
Sure.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm going to commission this comic book. I, the publisher, I'm going to commission this comic book, but I'm going to commission 6, 12 issues.
Right.
So you, the creators, can tell a coherent story from start to
Yeah.
finish, and we'll assess it from there. But what happens a lot is you'll get to 7 or 8 like this, and no, we're just not going to continue. And it's frustrating as for the audience, for us, and it's
And
frustrating for the creators, and it's just straight up frustrating.
there is a ninth issue out there, and I opted not to cover that because it was included in some comic cavalcade or some anthology later on, just as a, but it was also in like black and white,
And it's
which is fun,
incomplete, isn't it?
but it was incomplete
Yeah.
and it was just tacked on to some anthology. And so I'm like, I'm not including that on this because it still didn't wrap anything up.
And it doesn't add anything to, I did read it. It
Yeah.
doesn't add anything to this. It's still,
No, it just leaves the mystery open.
yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, this comic book, a wonderful showcase for Steve Ditko's art. It's an incredible showcase for Steve Ditko's art.
And I think that
It
that's, yeah, I think that that's where he was. The art came first. The
Yeah.
story was, I don't even think it was second. It was sort of third or fourth down the line.
It makes no sense in many ways. The dialogue is clunky and bothersome, but it's also, and this is why I love comics, is for all the wacky things that happen in this comic that we didn't even talk about, And I recommend this comic as just anyone who's a fan of comic books, particularly the old school styles and whatever. Oh, this is so worth the read, but prepare to be frustrated.
This highlights, I mean, I know it's a DC comic, but this is, you had said it earlier, this is a Marvel comic. And it is very much, it feels like a
It's
Marvel
done in the
method.
Marvel style.
It's done in the Marvel method
Yeah, the Marvel
of,
method.
yeah, where the art was delivered and someone had to come up with, oh, okay, well, I got to put words on this thing.
The dialogue is very Marvel. The art is very Marvel. And anybody who knows comics knows what I mean by that. DC and Marvel have very distinct artistic styles
And storytelling styles too,
and storytelling styles.
especially at this era.
I love this comic so much. And it's a terrible comic book.
That sums it up perfectly.
Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely. I cannot recommend this as far as quality,
No, absolutely
but I
not.
had
There's
a
no quality to this at all.
yeah, but I had a hoot reading through this. It was a lot of fun.
And this is why, I said like I love comics because comics make something like this where you have a giant red, I'm gonna hammer this, a giant red ball with horns and tiny arms floating. And you have a thing called the Area of Madness. And you have like these exaggerated caricaturations of bad guys and good guys and moral and ethical gray areas. There's so much about it that is like no other medium does this.
And not to mention a main character in a colorful onesie that just is constantly having these weird shapes and psychedelic things around him.
Right.
It's bizarre, but it's cool,
It's
you know?
completely nuts.
Yeah.
This is why comics exist. We could talk about the serious comics and the comics that are like, these are the ones that define and blah, blah, blah. I don't care. I mean, I do care, and I do care about the comics, but we're not talking about that today.
And you know what? And there's a place for this. I mean, that this is what makes the medium of comics really unique and dynamic and wonderful. And that is that you can have something that is, you know, poignant and meaningful and beautiful, but then you can also have something that is batshit insane crazy and just done for fun.
It's
Yeah.
like Z grade film or B movies. I don't even know if B movies count. I think Shade isn't even a B movie. It's a Z grade where the director just goes crazy because they got a camera
Right.
and they got some actors who want to do whatever.
Yeah,
And you know
it's
what? You watch those films and they're oftentimes more entertaining than whatever wins an award.
right. It's somebody with an iPhone and some and Adobe effects and said, "Hey, let's just do something."
Right.
You know? And that's what this guy, yeah, and we like comics for
Yeah,
this reason.
we love comics. I
Okay.
don't really have much else to say. I just I this comic book is everything that I hate and love about comics. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And I'm so happy that comics like this exist in the world.
I'm right there with you, 100%. I enjoyed the hell out of this.
Yeah.
It's not good,
No, it's not good.
it's not good, but it's
But it's
enjoyable.
great.
It's great. There you go.
It's not good, but it's great.
So anyway, thanks for recommending this. This is just one of those things that's always I've known about, and it's been in my Rolodex of comics to read. I'm glad I got around to
And
it. Thank you.
if you end up reading this or you don't end up reading this, please visit Peter Milligan, Chris Boccolo, Vertigo series, because holy crow.
That is definitely an example of Steve Ditko's ideas done better by other people. Okay. I think we've nailed this one. Do you want to know what we're going to read next time?
No, I have no interest in what we're eating.
Okay. Well, goodbye, everybody.
No. So, Paul, would you like to tell us what we will be enjoying for our next exciting episode? of the collected edition.
Well, we're going to keep it in the 70s for 70s Woo. Weirdness. Specifically 1979, we're going to be reading Micronauts by Woo. Bill, yeah, by Bill Mantlow and Michael Golden. Issues 1 to 12, that is the original run of Micronauts. It's based on the story, the toy line that was out at the time. And Paul Matthew Carr had some Micronauts in his greedy little hands at the time.
I might have had as well. Yeah. I love the fact that we're finally reading a Bill Mantlow comic.
Yep.
And a Michael Golden art comic.
I know.
I mean, these are two creators. I'm excited to finally get them into our podcast world.
Yeah. And this is one of those This is one of those comics where it went out of print for a long time because Marvel lost the rights to the toy right. line, and it was taken over. I think IDW had it for a while, but rights have now come back to Marvel. So we might be seeing more Micronauts stories. Who knows? But this has been put out in a nice little trade. So
yes,
a collected edition. So we're going to jump on that fact and read some of it.
I think that sounds fun.
Okay. Yeah, me
and
too.
And I have a feeling it will be more coherent.
Maybe. Who knows?
Who can say?
It's still 70s. So
it is still, yeah.
But that's it. So next time, Micronauts, and thank you all for listening. I appreciate you struggling through us trying to talk about this insanity. That was Shade the Changing Man. And of course, we'd love to hear your comments about this comic and Steve Ditko and whatever. So join us on our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where you can leave comments and go to our new Blue Sky Collected Edition Woo! Or Collected Ed Pod on Blue Sky. That is the only place you will find me on socials these days.
Yeah, good luck finding me anywhere on socials.
Okay, that's it. Please join us next time. And until then, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.